Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Out of Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, wins, goals, glee, the long-anticipated misery-free edition. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Up the Table. Well, isn't it nice to bounce into a day, hey, listener? It's been a while since we've done it. Back-to-back wins for the men, the women ending their opening day hoodoo. Suddenly things feeling a little bit rosier in the Chelsea garden. We're here to discuss the Fulham game, the win against Spurs, plenty of other stuff too. We're going to hear from Levi Colwell. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I am joined by two of the Athletic's finest. You both had their Lindahl's protein pudding before we get going today. How you doing, Liam Toomey?
I'm good. I'm reveling in this new sponsor bounce.
We are infinite athletes. And as we'll hear, that's all it took for Chelsea to get back in the goals. Simon Johnson, fresh from Craven Cottage. Must have been nice to not have to wonder about what aspect of Chelsea not quite firing you were going to write about. You had a pick of positive subjects.
I'm just dizzy. dizzy at seeing Chelsea in 11th as well. It seems mightily high.
Top of the table, top half of the table at least. Here we come. Possibly. All right, let's get into Fulham versus Chelsea then. Went down on Monday night.
Chelsea just trying to work their way forward with a bit of patience. Now they clip it out wide towards Levi Colwill. Down that left-hand side, he's danced onto it. Mudryk making a run ahead of him into the penalty area. Here is Mudryk! It's 1-0 Chelsea! Chelsea have won it back. Here's Palmer, edge of the penalty area, slipping it forward to Brozier, and it's 2-0! Oh, unbelievable stuff! 2 goals in 2 minutes! Armando Brozier proving that the manager's got the selection right.
Too many positive things, so happy. But now it's about to be ruthless and keep working really hard and trying to find better position, better solution, and giving to the team more tool to performance for the future.
Hi Chelsea fans, love to see you today in the game, and I really appreciate your support. Like always, doesn't matter we win or lose, you're always with us, and we all very appreciate it. And thank you for coming today on the stadium, and see you soon.
Well, Lucy and Simon were at Craven Cottage. Lucy got so giddy at seeing Chelsea win, she pretended Crystal Palace had played an FA Cup final. Dom's not here, Lucy, so there's no need to try and butter him up. Let's hear producer and journalist reveling, shall we?
Well, producer Lucy here at Craven Cottage, and I've witnessed history for the first time since the FA Cup final against Crystal Palace forever ago. I have seen Chelsea win a match in person. It was quite emotional, Simon. Mykhailo Mudryk scoring his first goal. You wait 303 Premier League minutes, and then you get 2 in 82 seconds. Can we please have your match report?
I'd like to credit Infinite Athlete for this dramatic turnaround. Clearly, they didn't just invest over £40 million to sponsor the shirt. They've also brought the goal-scoring touch, much-needed goal-scoring touch to this club. But no, it was weirdly comfortable. I thought inevitably second half Chelsea weren't as good because Mudryk had gone off. That's the concern, of course, that with every positive at Chelsea there comes a negative soon after, and it usually involves an injury. We don't know yet. We haven't heard Pochettino as we're talking, but you know, you only take him off surely if he's felt something. And then Casado, of course, he's just gone off with strapping on his left knee. It seemed like he was trying to get injured about three or four times in the second half. It happened more than once. He went down in agony. But look, it's such an important win just to breed a bit of confidence. Follows off the back of Brighton. There was some lovely football. Cole Palmer, his first Premier League start for Chelsea, and he looked very, very good out there. And he's already sort of going. When he was first signed, a lot of people said, why? I think we saw a reason why this evening. I just want to give a shout out that Hugh Grant, with about 12 minutes to go, he's not a real football fan because he walked off in disgust. I think he's seen enough with Fulham. He just went, they're never going to score. And he just walked off. And it's just like, well, perhaps he's got an audition in the morning. I don't know. But it was good. It's good that Chelsea are winning again.
And some beautiful moments you don't necessarily catch on the TV screens if you're not here. When Mudryk scored, the hug between Enzo Fernandez yes. and Caicedo, I almost had tears in my eyes. And the team talk, pep talk that Pochettino was giving to Cole Palmer on the way off, you could tell he was absolutely delighted with what he'd seen in that first half. There yeah. are finally reasons, it feels like, to actually be positive. It wasn't just that Brighton result wasn't just a flash in the pan. We were seeing things now.
Just remember who you're talking to, Lucy, right? Yes, no, you're right. There were things to be positive about, the first half in particular. The way that the midfield was working together, Fernandez, Gallagher and Cole Palmer, although he was playing in the right, but he was cutting in a lot and drifting into space. Yeah, Mudryk, he's been taking steps, and you just hope that it was just a precautionary withdrawal, because just when he's getting a run of starts... Took the goal very well. Levi Colwell, funny enough, when he was bombing down the left there, I was about to make a bit of a sarcastic comment that he's not exactly known for his left wing-back abilities. And then he puts in the most beautiful pass. I mean, no one can doubt his ability passing the ball, but he's not really known for whipping them in from the flank. But that was a perfectly weighted ball. Mudryk, you wouldn't have known he hadn't scored in the Premier League before the way he took it brilliantly. And Broglie, you've got to be happy with for him. Hasn't scored for a year because... He hasn't been around for a year, and I was a bit surprised he started because he's barely played, but you wouldn't have known it, to be honest. He looked really good, and I think he came off just after the hour mark, because not because of an injury, but because just to inevitably touch on the fact that he's barely played and they don't want to burn him out straight away. But that's a really good thing, because if Broglie is a genuine choice up front, it means suddenly... Jackson, the weight's not all on his shoulders, and Pochettino can rotate them or whatever, how he sees fit, or take one off, bring the other one on. Suddenly there's a few options, but again, it just depends on this injury list as well, and hopefully it's not been added to.
Well, by the time you listen to this on Tuesday evening, let's hope it's not an ACL for Mykhailo Mudryk. Signing off positively, producer Lucy positive. And Simon from Craven Cottage, it is back to you, Matt.
Thank you very much. I think that's probably the only mention Hugh Grant will get in a voice note this season, but we'll see about that. But before we hear from Levi Colwill, Lim, let's get your take on the game. Chelsea with those two goals in 82 seconds, and that's kind of what we've been craving, right? An early chance to have been taken, and that changes everything around the game.
Yeah, I was waiting to see how many London bus references were going to be made.
Did one in commentary, I'll confess, yeah.
Online and in copy when Chelsea got those two in quick succession. But I felt from the opening minutes of the game, they were playing really well. And I tweeted probably one of the most insightful tweets that I've posted in a long time early in the game. Chelsea are doing lots of nice things. More on this as I get it. Because they just were. They were moving the ball around really well. I thought the midfield in particular... was probably the best it's looked this season. The balance of it, with Caicedo usually deepest, Enzo kind of moving around the middle third, and Gallagher operating a bit higher up the pitch where his pressure could force turnovers and make good things happen. There was plenty of fluidity within that. I think they all took up really intelligent positions to receive the ball. They were all really sharp when they got the ball. And then in front of them, you had Mudryk building on, I think, the flashes that we've seen of him in recent weeks. Cole Palmer on his first Premier League start, looking really, really good and delivering, I think, on everything that he'd shown in more limited minutes in terms of picking the ball up between the lines, making good decisions, finding good passes. And Armando Broya showing, I think, a lot more sharpness than I would have expected him to after so long out. I posted before the game. I'm not going to reference all of my tweets, Matt, but I did post before the game that I thought it was going to be unlikely, really, for him to significantly impact the game. I think it would have been unreasonable to expect it, but he did. He had that horrible miss in the first minute. He didn't let that get him down. And then got a bit of luck with his goal. But I think overall, he was probably the biggest single positive of that game and well worth being a certain Athletic colleague's match piece.
Yeah, I mean, great performances from 1 to 11 or 1 to 26 if we're being squad number-y. Simon, kind of globally, did you think this was Chelsea's best performance as a team of the season, given him in mind what's come before, who they were playing, etc.?
That I'm not sure of, because I still think Liverpool, given the standard of opposition and given how good Liverpool have been since then, I know Chelsea didn't win that game, but I still think that the standard opposition has to be taken into account. But certainly it's very close to that, partly because they won, which helps. But it was a genuinely, certainly first half. I think second half it wasn't as good, understandably so, partly because Mudryk unfortunately had to go off, and that sort of reduced Chelsea's threat, as well as Mattson sort of tried. You could tell Fulham suddenly didn't have this incredibly fast man to worry about anymore, who really hugged the touchline for the majority of that first half. Of course, not for the goal. And that was partly why that goal was so beautiful, the run he made. But he really gave Fulham concerns, and I think is why they couldn't press too convincingly, because they were so worried about what Mudryk would do to them if he got the ball. But I did enjoy the football that's been played. Our Fulham colleague, Peter Rutzler, was sitting next to me, and he was bemused. He was saying to me, hang on, I thought Chelsea were rubbish, you know, sort of thing. And I went, well, no, I don't think the points, don't want to sound like Pochettino here, but I don't think the amount of points does reflect how Chelsea have played. They've not been as bad as the points tally suggests. And also he said, oh, they seem to be beating the press every time. Whether you could call what Fulham were doing a press, it wasn't the most convincing press in the world, but they were playing through the lines on a consistent basis. Enzo, Caicedo, Palmer, etc. They're always finding an avenue around Fulham's players. And yes, you could sort of question if Fulham were top class team and all that. But I do remember Fulham, not so much at Craven Cottage, but at Stamford Bridge last season, making life really difficult for Chelsea to play through them. So I do think Chelsea deserve credit, especially as we've spent the majority of the last 6 weeks hammering them. So when they do have a good performance and a good result, I don't think we should focus, although I have done a little bit, I don't think we should focus too much on the limitations of the opponents and just enjoy the refreshing change. A bit like the paint on my wall, Matt, that's going on as we speak. New gloss of paint, it's the start of a new era.
Yeah, and Mikhailo Mudryk, very much the exemplar of that on Monday night. We asked for your thoughts on Twitter at SO Cobham Pod, the place to give us them. Here's Malachi, who says, so happy for Mudryk. I can't fathom how what's happening in Ukraine has impacted his start to life at Chelsea. I hope he keeps getting the chances, the patience and love from fans, as his smile after scoring and the team unity was great to see. Well, let's hear about Mikhailo Mudryk, about Armando Broya, Cole Palmer and more from Levi Colwill. Simon was part of the mix zone that spoke to him, and this is what Levi had to say.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was so happy. I think you've seen the celebrations after. I was so happy for him. luckily, well, the pass was lucky anyway. Don't know how I found him. I couldn't do it again, but yeah, I'm over the moon for him. You know, he's a great player. He can be one of the best in the world. And it's just to kick on from here, and then hopefully he can just build on, and you know, it'd be a great one.
Well, you obviously see him a lot more than we do in terms of what he does in training, Levi. Is that the kind of stuff that he does all the time in training? It seems like he's really rated by you guys, and we haven't seen him do it on a regular basis yet.
Yeah, well, I think obviously it's been tough for him since he's joined, 100%. But like I said, the first half today he was amazing. So I think everyone can see the qualities he has. And like you said, we see it all the time in training. He's such a good player. And to come here and bring it here for the first half, he was amazing. And like I said, he's got to build on from it.
How significant is it, Levi, that Armando's also back and scoring as well?
Yeah, man, I'm so happy for him. You know, it's been a long time he's been out injured. He's obviously came back, he's been working so hard. And to come in today and score, it's the best way to come back.
And does it sort of, because obviously Nicholas has been carrying all the pressure, all the scrutiny of being a striker, now you've got Armando there as well, it will help potentially both of them out to have two options now.
100%, you know, they're both great strikers, so to have that battle day in, day out for the starting position is going to be good for both of them. They're both going to learn, and when they come on the pitch, they've got to take their chances. You know, it's been a change with like new players coming in, players leaving, so we're going to have to adapt to each other and get used to each other at the end of the day. Which we have. Obviously Cole's a marvellous player, and today you see that, and last game against Brighton. So you know, to have these players competing every day, it's just so good for the team, so good for the environment. It's a good battle.
Congratulations, Levi, for using the word marvellous. Not enough 20-year-olds doing that, in my opinion. It goes off at half-time then, Simon. Karen's asking, how is he? We're told it's a quad injury. Is that code for his bum? He's hurt his bum, has he?
I don't know what the code for that is, but no, I mean, I saw it was a surprise. You know, there was a, because normally when a player goes off injured, there's some hint of it beforehand. I certainly didn't see him in too much distress. And having watched some of it back when I got home, there was a clip just at half time, and you just see him walking completely fine off the pitch. So I'd like to think it was more precautionary, that it wasn't too serious. The Pochettino is instantly thinking, right, 2-0 up, you know, let's not risk it, and that he will be involved in Burnley, because I think I kind of forget what I said to Lucy post-match, but getting a run of starts, I just think it's so important that he continues this momentum. It's one of the reasons why when we did a Madrid piece recently, whilst there was cause for alarm, you didn't want to go in too strong on him, because I did sort of think there is this player in there. And we're starting to see in little bits and pieces that confidence starting to flow and come out of his game. And I think that goal is it deserves a lot more credit. It's actually a beautiful goal. Playing out from the back, Casado, lovely ball. I remember Levi Colwell just sort of joking with Pete, going, he's not a left wing back, what's he doing there? Sublime pass and an incredible finish. And yeah, you just want to see him at Burnley, don't you, to continue this momentum he's on.
Yeah, it's the first time he'd started four successive games for Chelsea. Caicedo as well goes off injured, told it's a contusion, which is football speak for Bruce. John, echoing what Lucy said in the voice note, the clip of Enzo and Caicedo celebrating after Mudryk's goal was so wholesome and perfect. Feels like the start of real chemistry. Hopefully so. Liam, one player we haven't mentioned, you got the man of the match and a lot of love from Frank Lampard in the Sky studio, was Conor Gallagher. He's the new Mason Mount, isn't he? And that he's divisive on Chelsea Twitter, but he is a key part of Maurizio Pochettino's Chelsea.
Yeah, it's been really striking how prominent Pochettino has made him in this team. Not only is he starting every game, but he's now captain with Reece James and Ben Chilwell sidelined. I think he's been excellent, and he's actually improved week on week. And given the fact that he's played a variety of different midfield roles, even in this handful of games, I think Gallagher's really showing how rounded his skill set is. And the thing that really impressed me against Fulham was the thing that he's often criticised for, which is his technique in tight spaces and his touch. And I thought his touch was so assured against Fulham. He was so aware of what was around him. There were a couple of times where players were trying to press him from behind and he just effortlessly shifted the ball away from them or jinked around them as he received a pass. He picked really intelligent positions to receive the ball. And that goes back to what I was saying before. It wasn't just him. It was Caicedo, Enzo doing that. Cole Palmer was really good at it. But the point is that Gallagher didn't look out of place. And I think there have been quite a few Chelsea fans ever since he started playing for Chelsea who have felt that Gallagher does look out of place technically in this team. And I don't think that's... it may have been true once. That's open for debate, but I don't think it's true right now. I think he's made really big technical strides. He's a really smart player and he still retains the ability to do the things that he's always been able to do, which is to make good things happen with his hustle and his intelligence. He can make a one-man press work and actually turn the ball over when most players wouldn't, and you shouldn't really be able to. And there were a couple of incidents of that in the second half. So I think he's becoming a really valuable player for Chelsea. And we'll see what that means, what that counts for in January when the transfer window opens again, with his contract situation as it is. But right now, Conor Gallagher is one of Chelsea's best performers and absolutely deserves to be in this team.
The Mount comparison, Simon, is a bit of a lazy one in as much as they're both midfielders. They're both graduated through the Chelsea Academy. But it strikes me that he's got the same kind of football brain that Mount has, in that he's quite a coachable player and that he understands roles and responsibilities on the pitch. And that doesn't always manifest itself in particularly flashy play, but you can see that it's something that managers, whether that be Gareth Southgate in Mount's case or Maurizio Pochettino in Gallagher's case, that they find that kind of thing invaluable, right?
Yeah, and the quality that he actually cares.
And that's what Lampard was saying on Sky, wasn't it? That the levels that he trains at and the impact that has on other players.
Yeah, and this is why you have to be really careful with this selling the family China transfer policy. Of it's all very well selling players to help with FFP, but what do you lose if you sell too many academy products that are talented anyway, but get the club and care about the club and want to do well for the club, want to give their all for the club, can tell new arrivals about the club? I mean, Gallagher and his family, the Chelsea diehards, they want this to work more than anyone. And you can see that with the way that Conor plays. Yeah, sometimes it's almost like he cares too much. I've always felt that since he's been promoted to the first team, that sometimes his desire to make an impact, to do something, has perhaps led to him trying too much and running around too much. But I think you can tell he's getting more and more comfortable wearing a Chelsea shirt and the responsibility that comes with it. And I think this is very similar to the Mason Mount, Frank Lampard kind of relationship, where Frank would pick Mason Mount and there'd be this accusations of, you know, on the unflattering sort of talk of, oh, is he Lampard's son kind of thing. I think it's very significant that Pochettino, yes, there are a few injuries, but Pochettino is making it very clear to everyone that he loves Conor Gallagher. And by giving him the captaincy as well over some very big names, is sending a statement out to not just the Chelsea fans, but perhaps the Chelsea owners too.
Everything that Simon says about Gallagher's connection to Chelsea, that's always been true. And we know that alone isn't enough for him to be a long-term Chelsea player. Quality has to be the number one priority always when you talk about who starts in a team that's looking to compete for the Premier League and Champions League. But where I think this conversation is shifting is that Gallagher is increasingly showing the quality as well as all those other things that merits being in this team and being a valuable part of this team on a regular basis. You know, there's a couple of comparisons that come to mind. The one that came to mind watching him last night was not a Chelsea comparison. It was Jordan Henderson, someone who went to Liverpool, was a relatively unheralded signing and was constantly underrated in terms of his technical ability. He was kind of prized for his hustle stats and all these other things, but steadily and incrementally improved throughout his career and ended up being a leader and a Champions League winning captain. And that was also true of Lampard once upon a time as well. You know, when the Abramovich takeover happened, he was challenged by all these new signings to up his game. And it feels like Gallagher's been placed in a similar situation by Chelsea's mass recruitment, particularly in midfield over the last couple of months. And he's responded in the best way possible. And it seems to have elevated his game. We'll see if it continues. But right now, I think all the signs are very positive for him.
A couple more things before we move on from Fulham. Andrew says, second half as we ran out of players was so ugly, Jose would frame it and put it on his wall. But the first half was beautiful. Enjoyed that. And Akeo Mbokwa, apologies if I've got that wrong, asks, will Ian Matson ever play at left back for Chelsea? Does he actually enjoy playing further forward, or is it just another case of being grateful to rack up any form of minutes? So, Simon, he comes on for Mudryk at half-time. The role that he played, that kind of left-side midfield role, not that dissimilar to where he played for Burnley last season, right? And actually probably the most natural position that we've seen him play for Chelsea this season, certainly more natural than playing in the number 10 role. How's he done for you in these few cameos we've seen from him?
I like him. He just seems very, very comfortable. Doesn't seem to be fazed by suddenly going up a few rungs in the... Look, we can all argue how good Chelsea are given the struggles they've had, but in terms of scrutiny, to go from playing for Burnley to Chelsea, it is a different stratosphere. And he every time he's on the pitch, he always does something that makes you think, yeah, he's got something, this kid. And very unfortunate with the shot that hits the post. I mean, technically wise, it was superb. Opened his body up, lovely shot. Keeper had no chance, and it's just a shame it didn't end up in the top corner rather than coming off the woodwork. But again, like Gallagher, you just, because there's a lot of, as Liam wrote recently, there's about the two of them. You know, there's question marks over his future too. I'd be very loath to lose Ian Matson. I think he's the kind of player that could come back to haunt you and sort of go, why did we let him go?
All right, well, we'll see if he gets a reunion with Burnley at the weekend. We'll look ahead to that game in Thursday pod. Next today, though, we're going to talk about the other Chelsea winners this weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Chance got it back from Sophie Ingle. Got a cross in as well. It was a perfect one for Mia Fischel. What a debut. James into Fischel. Fischel shot beaten away by the goalkeeper. There's Cannarin. Oh, it's surely going to be a goal. That looks over the line. Brighton celebrating. The play's going on. It's clipped back in toward Lauren James, and she's going to score anyway. And now it doesn't matter whether the initial effort was over the line or not, because Lauren James is off and running for the season. So Chelsea got their WSL title defence off to a winning start on Sunday. They beat Spurs 2-1 at Stamford Bridge. Goals in either half from debutant and Chelsea fan Mia Fischel, and non-debutant and Chelsea fan Lauren James did the damage here. Martha Thomas replied for Spurs after a Mucevic error, but it didn't matter. Liam, the key thing is to end the opening day hoodoo, right? Doesn't matter how you win, as long as you win on opening day. And with Arsenal getting beaten by Liverpool as well, actually turned into a brilliant day for Emma Hayes and co.
Yeah, it's kind of ominous for the rest of the division, because in the last few years, Chelsea have grown accustomed to playing catch-up after early season stumbles. So for them to already have an advantage over Arsenal and to get off to a faultless start, albeit with quite a hard fought win over Spurs, I think is a real positive.
So it was kind of a fluid formation. I was at this game covering it for Chelsea. It was like a three at the back that turned into a four out of possession. Miel de Bruyt, Carter and Neve Child, who was absolutely incredible. Two brilliant assists from her. There was a potential controversial moment just before the 2-0 goal. Guro Wrighton had the ball over the line. She went off celebrating, but the ref played on. They hadn't seen that it had crossed the line. Luckily, Lauren James scored seconds later. Makes you wonder why they didn't turn on the goal line technology. We had a minute silence before the game in memory of Maddie Cusack, the former Sheffield United player who died last week. It was particularly emotional for Emma Hayes because she announced that her father had passed away last week too. And you could see that emotion, Simon, at the end of the game when the Chelsea players presented her with a shirt with her dad's name on it on the pitch. And one of those things that was sort of poignant and upsetting, but also pointed to the unity that Chelsea women have.
Yeah, and it was really emphasised to me back in the last week. You'd like to think we're all close to our dads, right? But it was really emphasised that they were really, really, really close, and that it hit her really hard. So it was a really nice touch. I thought it helped that they won the game as well, but it was a really nice touch for them to present. It was Papa 82, I think, wasn't it? I think that meant the world, you could tell, and understandably there were tears and so on, but not that a game of football can make amends for such a horrible personal moment. But you could tell being around Chelsea family was helping her to a degree. And also she had the nice thing earlier this week, of course, the other day, of being inducted into the, I think it was the Football Hall of Fame, wasn't it? Along with Ian Wright. So what an incredible array of emotions that Emma Hayes has gone through. But it's an honour that she thoroughly deserves, that the impact she's made on women's football and football, forget the gender here, just football in general. Yeah, she's a real leader. And that's why Chelsea wins so many titles, because the players are inspired by her.
Just from the Chelsea point of view, Matt, I wanted to ask you, what were your first impressions of Mia Fischel? How do you think she's working with Lauren James? And how does that dynamic work when Sam Kerr is on the pitch as well?
Yeah, look, really, really promising in terms of the link up between those two. Fischl kind of a little bit isolated at times in the first half, but took a goal really nicely. You can tell she's a player who's used to scoring. You know, you see that with Sam Kerr. When the chance comes away, she's going to put it away. And Chelsea nearly scored three or four beautiful goals right at the start of the second half. And James and Fischl were central to that. Sioka Nuskin also really impressive on her debut. I think she's going to make a big difference to this team. In terms of Kerr, expecting her to be back potentially for Manchester City next week, Erin Cuthbert too. So Chelsea adding a bit of depth, but they do need to spread the goals around because Kerr, I say only, but she only got 12 goals in the WSL last season. So they don't want to be totally reliant on her. And in that regard, it's great to see Fran Kirby make her come back as well. She came on in the second half, first time we've seen her since February. Just to ram home the importance of that Chelsea win and Arsenal defeat, other than, you know, losing in front of a record crowd to Liverpool, who are not one of the heavy hitters in the WSL by any means. No team has ever won the league after losing more than two games in a season. So they're really up against it now, Arsenal. They've got very little margin for error if that's going to continue. I guess the only slight downer, potentially, Liam, is the crowd was just shy of 15,000. They had 55,000 at the Emirates. There's been a lot of talk about ticket prices. I mentioned on the show last week, you could still have got into this game for 12 quid, relatively low. Emma Hayes saying, look, it costs 300 grand to stage a game at Stamford Bridge. So we've got to be practical about how much we're charging here. But the club must have been a bit disappointed that that was a turnout on Sunday.
Yeah, I haven't had any feedback from the club about how they felt about the attendance. I know there was a fair bit of deliberation about the pricing for the women's games in particular, and that the ultimate decisions that were made were quite heavily influenced by Emma Hayes and her public stance on the pricing of women's football. You know, she was very outspoken last year about the need to increase the ticket prices to help the growth of the game, particularly when it comes to these showpiece matches at Stamford Bridge. And that's not just because of the costs of putting them on, but I think there's also a sense that the price of the ticket is indicative of the value you're putting on the product, you know. And I think if you want to grow the value of the women's game, maybe the pricing has to rise accordingly. But there is also that delicate balance of you're trying to attract people through the door, and sometimes you may have to entice them through the door with lower prices. So I think it's one that Chelsea will continue to think long and hard about, and maybe the attendance for this game will have an impact on what they do in the future. But I don't think it's an easy decision one way or the other. And it's unlike the conversation around the pricing for men's games. I don't think this is about really the club looking to try and ramp up profits or anything like that. I think this is a far more nuanced conversation about where the women's game is and where they hope it can go.
And just a theory, I also wonder whether Chelsea are victims of their own success, that because they have been so dominant in terms of title wins, that there's an air of complacency, you know, that, well, Chelsea's just going to go and win the title again. And perhaps that doesn't drive the bums on seats. Just a theory. But if you sort of think, well, Chelsea always going to win the competition, it might not lead to you wanting to go see the game quite as much. Whereas Arsenal are a team on the up. And it's a whole buzz, a bit of an excitement. Or can they? I know Arsenal sort of had their periods of success many years ago, but the women's game is different now, in a different place. And it feels like the same buzz that the Arsenal have with the men's team as a team on the up, there's a similar sort of vibe around the women's team too. So it's just a theory. I'm just sort of thinking out loud whether that may be playing a slight part, that there's a sort of a complacency that Chelsea will just go on and win the title again, but they'll need the fans behind them to help them do that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. The next game they're playing at Stamford Bridge is the 19th of November against Liverpool. So maybe we'll keep an eye on the prices and the marketing around that. It's actually when there's an international break in men's football. So that might mean that they get a few more going then if the men's team aren't playing that weekend. Next up, though, for the women, it's the first big test of the season. They go to Manchester City on Sunday, which is always a really tough game. We'll look ahead to that on our Thursday show. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-21s lost 4-2 at Spurs on Monday night. Ronnie Stutter, yeah! And Santo Boniface got the Blues goals. And the under-18s beat Arsenal 3-2 at Cobham at the weekend. And El McNeely bagged the brace. And Ato Ampa also notched there. Simon, we've not pushed nearly hard enough your post-match piece from the Fulham game. So do that for us now before we go, please.
Yeah, so I've written about Amanda Breuer. Obviously, Mudryk would have been tempting, but we have written about him recently. But for Breuer, you could argue it was an even bigger moment. We all remember, anyone that's seen the clip of the moment he got injured against Aston Villa in December, the horrific cries of agony the moment it happened. Of course, he suffered a serious knee injury. And this was his first start since then. And there were different, as I say in the intro, there was different cries you could hear and see this time around. It was one of pure jubilation. So, yeah, I write about his obviously a touch on the fact that the hard journey he's faced to get to this point, the bit about Levi that I asked him about Breuer, but also just saying how significant a moment this is for Pochettino, that suddenly the option of Breuer, it relieves some of the pressure off Jackson's shoulders, but also provides him with much needed competition, that he knows there's someone who can take his place. And that's always a good thing. And reflect on the fact that Pochettino did say in August, don't forget about Amanda Breuer, when there was talk about Chelsea signing another striker, and here we are, and everyone's talking about Breuer now. So yeah, it's paying tribute to Breuer. It's just the start though, but again, a bit like Conor Gallagher, you can see that he's very hungry to succeed in the Chelsea shirt.
Yeah, he needed that goal for all sorts of reasons. He's not been a frequent goal scorer of late before the injury. I think it was 1 in 22 in terms of club football. So yeah, big moment for him. Liam, you must have felt very smug and satisfied after Monday, given the piece that you and Simon collaborated on, Chelsea start under Pochettino. No panic yet, despite the lack of goals. And, you know, weren't you just proved 100% accurate? Give that a little push and tell us what else you're going to be working on, please.
Yeah, so that was a big read about the first 6 weeks of Chelsea's Premier League campaign under Pochettino, going beyond the results to the atmosphere around the club and how Pochettino's been dealing with it, how the players have been dealing with it. So give that a read. That's still up on The Athletic. I'm also running a piece on site on Wednesday about Andre Santos. It's fair to say his loan spell.
It's not my fault, okay? Yeah, a lot of people are coming for me on this.
Well, I have written the piece as if I'm writing directly to you, Matt. something of an open letter. but no, it's a analysis of this loan spell that has got off to a worryingly slow start from a Chelsea perspective in terms of Santos's minutes. Just trying to put that in context and take a broader look at what might happen if he doesn't play between now and January.
Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up. If you want to read those, it'll only cost you £1 a month for the first 12 months. My theory, for what it's worth, is that Forest didn't think that they were going to get both or maybe even either of Ibrahim Sangare and Nico Dominguez, and they got Andre Santos as backup, and then they ended up getting both those players. And so Santos fell down the pecking order. But, you know, it's a long old season. It can all change pretty quickly. So maybe he'll get some minutes for the other two-time European champions. We'll have to wait and see. That's going to do us for today. Many thanks to Lucy, to Liam, to Simon, and to Levi Colwill for joining us as well. We're going to be doing it all again in just a couple of days from now, looking ahead to Burnley and Manchester City and wondering who's going to be back and assessing injuries and all that kind of stuff. So join us for that if you can. For now, from all of us here, here's goodbye.
The Athletic.